Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. This week we are discussing The Other Side of Hope by the director that brought you The Lights in the Dusk and Le Havre. That is Aki Kaurismäki. Let me introduce a team that's going to help me here. It's Jenna.
Hi.
It's Jake.
Hello.
It's Sam.
Hi.
Oh, not the Sam you were expecting.
No.
Plot twist. M. Night Shyamalan style.
The other Sam.
The other side of Sam.
First time on the pod.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
Pleasure. You all right?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great too. Right, so before we get into the film, it's time for our pitches. So today's challenge is The Other Side of Hope starts with a man emerging from a pile of coal. Team, pitch a film that starts in the same way but goes off in a completely different direction, tackling different subject matter. I'm going to start with Jake.
All right, so mine is joining. You know how every film needs to come out these days as part of like a bigger universe or franchise, linking together lots of things. Spider-Man seems to be at the centre of that, but no one's thought of the collaboration between Spider-Man and The Simpsons. And so, if we remember the start of Spider-Man 3, in which Thomas Hayden Church, aka Flint Marko, gets stuck in this kind of swirling dust bowl machine, kind of like a pile of coal, and then he gets stuck in there, and then all it starts flowing around and spinning, and he's stuck in there, and he turns into the Sandman, and he can control sand and earth, and changes shape, and all these things. And so I wanted to combine that with Dan Castellaneta's Hans Moleman from The Simpsons. And we begin the film with Hans Moleman getting stuck in a big pile of coal that starts spinning and swirling. And suddenly Moleman becomes the superhero, and he can move and transport the power of coal, producing our film, Hans Coleman.
Strong.
There we are.
I like it.
Always with the pun, Jake.
Yeah, I mean, there's no other way.
Sam?
Mine is based on a drag queen who gets fired from their job at a coal mine and gets evicted from their house and ends up having to move back home with their family. And so it's like a sweet, hilarious tale where he opens up covered in soot in his face, and then at the end he's covered in makeup on a big stage, all happy.
Oh, wow. I thought about the visuals, that's nice.
You could use, and then go back and use the soot as an eyeshadow.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Oh, Jake, that's lovely. Any title, or that's still work in progress?
It's a work in progress.
So, Jenna?
I may have heavily borrowed my storyline from a great 90s TV show called Goodnight Sweetheart. I don't know if any of you remember that.
Starring Rodney from Nicholas Lindhurst.
That's him, yeah. So instead of like there's a cupboard and he can go back to the 1940s or something like that, I'm going to do the same thing but with the coal cupboard, right?
And because so everyone has a cold cup.
Wow. No, this is the thing, Helen, right? Is it's just a normal cupboard in this day and age. And then when he goes in, it turns into a cold cupboard. And then he walks out and it's like the 1920s.
It turns into a cold cupboard.
Yes, because it always used to be a cold cupboard. And he didn't know. He's unlocked it for the first time.
What era are we in?
Well, we've got present day and then we've got 1920s.
That's cold cupboard era.
And he's going to like have a new life in the 20s and now. And, you know, he's struggling in his current life. He doesn't have very much money, but in the 20s, the money he's got, wow, loads. And so he's living like a king. And does he want to go back in time? And what does that mean? You know?
It's like a bit About Time meets Life on Mars.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Wow.
No one else shares a love for Good Night, Sweetheart, then? No?
I've never seen it.
Oh, guys, you are missing out.
I just know he goes in a cupboard.
It's all on gold, don't worry.
Right, my pitch is it starts with this young teen coming out of a coal mine. No, not a pile of coal, coming out of a pile of coal. And he's like, Mum, I'm going to be a chimney sweep. And the mum says, oh, all right, love, don't forget your brushes. And she hands him his brushes. And then he goes off, and then his dad drives around and is like, you're only 11, it's too young to be a chimney sweep. Get back in the van, son. And he gets back in the van. And then...
And that's it.
He's looking at the tall chimneys and he's like, I want to... And everyone says, you will never be a chimney sweep. You'll never do this. And then he sort of meets this sort of slightly alcoholic chimney sweep played by the chimney sweep in Mary Poppins.
Right.
Mm. And he's like, oh, train me. Because you used to be a chimney sweep, didn't you? No, I never. Not anymore did I used to. And then he comes round to it, and then there's a competition between local... I mean, it's not like Eddie the Eagle, but
it is Eddie the Eagle.
It's similar in a way, I suppose. And then there's a competition in town, because there's loads and loads of different chimney sweeps setting up things, and they decide that they will decide who will be the best chimney sweep by the tallest... who can sweep the tallest chimney. And they say, you'll never do it! You'll never do it! And he said, I will do it. And at the end, he sort of gets in and he sweeps. And he doesn't sweep it the best, but he does end as a chimney sweep. And it's called Peter the Phoenix.
Great. Yeah. And I get, like, the metaphor of the ashes and the coal and the fire. Oh, it's good, Helen.
Mm. I think it's great.
Yeah.
I love your passion and your commitment to telling that story as well. Mm. I mean, can anyone but Helen win?
No,
I know it's not usual for the host to win, but...
I think we'll allow it.
Yeah.
It should be Helen.
Good.
She knew as soon as she started. I saw her rubbing her hands together. Right, this one's mine.
I've heard everyone else's. Okay, let's get into the film. So The Other Side of Hope is directed by Aki Kaurismäki and depicts the unlikely friendship between a Syrian asylum seeker and an ageing Finnish restaurant owner. With its sharp humour, Hopper-esque vignette and timely critique of how countries welcome... in quotation marks, those seeking asylum, it's no wonder Kaurismäki won the Berlin Silver Bear for Best Director. What did you think of the film?
I really enjoyed it. It was tragic yet funny, absurdly funny. It's very similar to his other films, so I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it's a very kind film as well. It's very loving. It's a film about friendship. And when you read the subject matter, if you don't know who the director is, if you read what the topic is, you might be thinking you're in for a kind of a Lochian drama that's going to make you feel hatred for the world and the system. And this, it will make you angry and frustrated, but at its core, it's more celebrating the goodness of people, I think. And that's what I really liked about it.
Yeah, I really agree with you, Jake. I'd never seen one of his films before, and so I didn't really know what to expect at all. And at one point I was like, am I actually watching the right film from what I've been told about? But yeah, it just was such a lovely look at kind of human nature, even in the darkest of times, that light can be found.
Thanks, Dumbledore.
Oh, sorry. I thought I was being really original.
So Sherwin Hadji, who plays the lead character of Khaled, talks of having a lot of freedom on set and his decision, he says, not to act, but just to think about how he would react in that situation. How did you think his performance was? And do you, like, I listening to that interview, I certainly got a sense of that feeling, and it seemed very, very natural. And the director is known for these very, like, poker-esque, deadpan performances, and it was bang on.
Yeah, I agree. Every character pretty much that you see with him is poker face, it's deadpan. You almost have no emotion, and yet you still feel emotion. One of my favourite scenes was the poker scene, where they're purposefully doing the poker faces.
I think there's certainly bits in this film that are treats for fans of his work. So, like, to put in a poker scene when he's known for being that is kind of a wonderful little gift to people who know him and know his work.
Yeah, it's I don't think it's not just there to be deadpan though and emotionless. I think that that works as part of the plot as well, and thematically, particularly for Khaled, because he's been through so much on his journey to Finland. The fact that kind of nothing perturbs him anymore because he's just seen the worst of the migrant crisis is that he's going to face this kind of futility of Finnish life with no emotion anymore because it's kind of been worn down. I think the characters in the film have all been worn down at this point. Mm-hmm.
I think it allows you to feel the emotion of the migrant crisis even more. I think, you know, we're kind of bombarded on the news with, look how terrible this is, look how awful it is, look at all these people suffering, that you can sometimes just become numb to that. But seeing someone who's been through it become numb to it in his performance is really powerful, to think, goodness, we're accepting this as just a part of everyday life for people and no one's doing anything.
Mm. And he faces a lot of bureaucracy as well when he first arrives in the country, and a lot of forms and interviews, which, like you were saying, Jake, goes along very well with this feeling of his journey and what he's been experiencing. But as you said, there's an awful lot of love in this film, and it's a very, very kind portrayal of the refugee crisis and of people, and of just people in general, actually. There's a lot of humanity in this film. There's a lovely scene where he's asking someone he meets, oh, can I borrow your phone? And he's just like, yeah, of course you can. Like, you don't need to ask. And, oh, and is it okay if I make a call? And would it be okay if I... And the guy is just so lovely and so, so kind to him. And those little moments, you're right, it's very important to point out that that does slightly break away from this deadpan style, and it's not that it's without emotion.
Yeah, one of the earlier scenes is the interview that he has with the civil servant about his journey, like, how did you get to Finland? And you think, first of all, he's kind of shot himself in the foot because he says that he arrived there by accident. But then he gives the whole backstory and talks about his feelings since he's arrived there and the way that people have treated him and everything that he's faced on from Syria all the way to here with his, who he started the journey with his sister, and then they got split up and he's still looking for her. And that is all delivered in the same manner as any other scene. And it's this extended long take. It's not the easy option here would be to do a close up and get him very emotive. But it's still mid-frame, you still see the table and everything around him, and it's quite cold, and it feels even worse by the fact that he's having to deliver this short, recent history to just an empty, unhomely room to someone that he doesn't know, when it must be hurting so much.
For sure. I think it's also important to point out that this is a strong film whenever it came out. Even though it's very relevant now, I think the way that it's been told and the storytelling and this unlikely friendship that forms, it's going to be a good film forever. And hopefully when the refugee crisis is not so strong in our minds, it's still going to hold, which I think is important, because I think especially when there's crises going on or things that are particularly pointed out by the media, it can kind of, it can get a bit wearing if you hear about, oh, it's another film about this or that, and it can seem like it, maybe it's coming out, you know, to chime in with whatever's going on in the world. And it does do a very good portrayal, and it does a lot of good points about that story, but it's a good film.
Mm. Yeah. It doesn't feel like it will be dated.
No.
It's not like...
Well, it's very... It's sort of very old in its style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of feels like late 60s, early 70s
yeah.
with how it's been shot, the composition of it. It's even got B-movie stylings in the performances, because there are non-actors there that kind of maybe don't know when a scene is starting or ending. But that's part of it. Like I'm watching Twin Peaks, new Twin Peaks at the moment, and that's a Lynch... thing, that a scene will go on a bit longer than you expect, and we're used to cross-cutting in a film, for instance, like when someone just walks to the edge of frame as if they're walking out, you'll then cut to the next shot where they're walking through it again, and so you get that rhythm. But this film will allow people to begin a scene, walk out of it, finish it before the next one starts. It's not constantly moving. It allows each scene to have its own life and its own breath, and it's for you to take in. And that's what I really love about it. Like particularly the poker scene, like that is very drawn out, but not in that it feels like it's languid. It's very enjoyable for the whole time of it, because it goes beyond the point of being long to just kind of bringing in every detail and just really relishing in it.
I really agree. And it particularly struck me that there's no music in that scene. And there is music throughout the film, which actually I wanted to talk to you guys about, but there's also points where it's used very sparingly, and it's never used to kind of overlay something that it's like, oh, just put some music on that, just sort of jazz it up a bit, which is great.
Like, well, the scene that I was saying earlier about being in the civil service booth talking about his journey, like that's prime kind of overbearing strings territory.
That is Ludovico Einaudi all over it. And I love him. But yeah, what did you think about, because there's a certain, I think every, I might be wrong here, but I think almost every use of music you see at source within the film. What do you think about that?
I really loved the music. I think that it really added to that whole kind of 50s, 60s, 70s ambience of the film, this kind of otherworldly feeling that it had. Especially really loved that they printed the lyrics of the songs that were being sung in English on the bottom of the screen along with the subtitles, so you could get a real sense of what that meant within the context of it. Really loved it.
There's a really good just straight rock and roll track that's just like, I play or I die. which is really lovely, and that reminded me of there's Songhai Blues, which is a band that kind of got exiled for playing Western music in Africa, but they just carried on playing their kind of African influenced American blues, and I love that idea that even though these Finnish guys in this band, they won't die if they stop playing, but like for Khaled. Like if he stops playing this game of trying to seek refuge, and he will get sent back, and there is a very good chance, like the rest of his family, we're told, he's going to die.
There's the way the music is used. There's great juxtapositions. I think one of the first buskers is when he's just arrived in the country, and he's sitting in a coffee shop, and just the outside is this busker saying like what a wonderful evening he's gonna have, and like they're gonna make love, and like this love song, and he's just sitting alone in this country that he doesn't know. He needs to go and try and find and seek asylum in the police office. Like, it's very good juxtapositions there, and it is that deadpan razor edge humor that is used really well.
And I think Khaled's relationship with the busker at the very beginning really gives us an insight into Khaled as a person, because he's gone through so much, and the kind of one of the first things that he goes past in the country is a guy playing music.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And even though he has got nothing, he still gives him money?
Yeah.
Which is, I think that kind of sums up a lot about the film as well. That idea of just finding something, some pleasure, some kindness, something that you like or love or enjoy, and just wanting to reward it as well.
Yeah, and holding on to those moments when you don't have a lot of stuff, but you've got a couple of moments thrown together, and like that's going to get you through the day.
Mm.
Yeah, that's something that's really lovely that's picked up on. And again, like I was totally on his side. I think in this kind of story, we're kind of used to the antagonist being part of the system, and it's great that this film, actually anyone that is kind of more evil and does things that are horrible, is kind of this kind of coming out of nowhere situation, or just part of the culture, and there's a gang that in particular that, and he's subject to quite a lot of abuse throughout the film.
Yeah, I'll go back to mention Ken Loach earlier, who would we could imagine doing a film based on similar topics quite easily. And I'm reminded of I, Daniel Blake, and issue that I had with that is the villainization of the workforce in the job centre. And I don't think he quite got that this is their job as much as it is anyone else's.
That's a really key point.
And I don't think this film reserves judgment on the workers there, and they become characters in themselves, and they become likable characters, the people that are working within the system.
They're really likable characters, yeah. And it's a very neutral portrayal of them as well, which is very mature filmmaking and obviously something that's had a lot of thought behind it.
I think that's also got something to do with the fact that he as a character doesn't see the bad in people. Like, in some ways, he doesn't let, you know, when he gets attacked by gangs or anything like that on the street, he doesn't let that affect him as he carries on. He sort of lets it go away. And so that when he's meeting with the civil servants, we kind of get his point of view of them, and he doesn't see them as bad people. He is looking to find the good all the time in his situation. So I think that's why it always seems like a positive film and no one seems nasty, because he's not letting himself be a victim to any of them.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, he's so hopeful about everything. We're almost seeing it through his perspective.
I think there's also a numbness to it. He's just become so numb to the violence that getting abused so regularly is actually not a big deal to him.
There is one kind of little explosion of violence, which I imagine, which is, although it's quite small compared to other films, which is his breaking point where he just says, "Do you want to fight?" And that's it. It's one punch each, and that's your kind of big climactic blockbuster moment.
But it's quite a polite offer of a fight as well. It's like, would that help you?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the guy who he has this unlikely friendship with, which is Vistrom, played by Sakari Kuasmanen. What did you think of him and his attempts to set up a business?
Well, we didn't meet him in context to Khaled for so long as well, which is what I really, really liked about this. Is because I was, you know, from the trailer and posters and things that, and how the film's been sold, that's going to be where that's the meeting point of the film. But it takes, is it about an hour until they
meet? Yeah, it's a long way.
It's a long time, yeah.
But I really enjoyed both sides of that, and the ultimate coming together. It's a lovely payoff.
I love that restaurant.
There were moments of Grand Budapest Hotel for me in that. Yeah.
Definitely.
The doorman.
Yeah. And bits where they sort of have to hide him and the dog in the cupboard. And
when he goes and pulls out the plug of the Hoover in the cupboard.
Yeah. So you realise the Hoover's still on during the inspection.
Because we meet Wiltstrom, is it when he's leaving his wife?
Yeah, who's sitting next to a spiky cactus.
Loved that scene so
me
much.
Me too. And sort of puts the wedding ring in with the pile of chain-smoked cigarettes.
And that's done that is one of a number of scenes that are done completely in silence and we know exactly what's going on. There's not a lot of dialogue really in the film.
Not at all, especially the first 10 minutes. Mm. It's really quiet, which is, it is that kind of feeling of like, it is what it is. Yeah. Like, you can see what's happening, it is what it is.
But as a piece of universal storytelling, which Korosmaki will want this to be, he will want, like, it's very accessible, and part of that is not kind of dominating the language of it, that it is told through bodies and faces and eyes and movement, and everyone can relate to that, and that's really key for it, and I think that will be part of its success.
And there's a lot of humour in visual gags as well.
Okay, yeah, there's one visual, there is a sight gag, which is my favourite bit of the whole film, and like that might be reductive for the whole film, but there's a bit with a guy cleaning a window.
I loved it. Yeah. I had to go back and rewatch it. Did I just watch that?
Yeah, like you have to be on the ball. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's great.
Yeah, and you'll know it when you see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that we all had to go back and rewatch it to check that it did happen is so good.
And there's so many little that I'm sure I have missed little moments within it that are hilarious as well, which makes sort of watching it for the second time, third time, it's going to be really great. Wilkstrom is he's trying to sell his shirts. He packs them up in the back of his car when him and his wife break up. And then he plays this poker game that we've talked about. He gets pretty lucky, and which I liked compared to Carles' journey.
I don't think he is lucky.
Do you not?
No, I think that's part of his character, that he is a genuine poker master. It's some kind of reluctant superpower, and that he's afraid of it. And once every 10 years, he'll be like, right, it's time. And so that's how he stockpiled all of the shirts for his shirts business. Went and played poker, won a load of money, bought all the shirts. Right, I'll do the shirts for a few years. Then I go play poker again, and now I'll start a restaurant.
That's a great superpower that we haven't seen told through film yet.
Poker man.
Yeah. So then he wants to buy this restaurant. I think it's called the Golden Pint.
Yep.
Mmm, tasty.
Yeah. Oh, the estate agent is such a good character.
There's so many great little moments like that. Which then becomes a sushi restaurant.
Yeah.
So good. What was it? Salted herring.
Salted herring. The scoops of wasabi.
Yeah.
But there's no kind of Fawlty Towers ending to that scene as well. It's just like they do this horrible sushi night and make the worst looking meals. And everyone just leaves. And
everyone's happy.
There's no big complaint or anything. And then they go back to being the Golden Pint again.
I like how after that scene at the end, he's just like, okay, you can go home.
Yeah, I'll clean up.
Yeah, and then they're all just like, okay, yeah, I'm going.
Like, yeah, that didn't quite work, did it?
there's a couple of bits in the third act stuff that we probably want to talk about now, so that's going to be in what we call spoiler territory. But do check out this film, The Other Side of Hope. It's whether you know his work or not, there's going to be things for you to really enjoy in this.
And it's not just on cinemas, it's home cinema today, from today as well. So if you can't make it to a cinema that's showing it, curzonhomecinema.com, it's on there instantly, you can watch it straight away.
Beautiful stuff. Spoiler territory. So there's this kind of other storyline that's going along with his sister, which Wilkstrom is kind of fundamental in bringing to a resolution. That scene is sort of becomes quite dark, and she herself, it's interesting because we've really warmed up to those characters by this point in the film. It's really late on, and there's been these great moments with the restaurant, and you're kind of expecting this great reunion moment. She's been hidden under the back of a lorry. They open up the thing and you're kind of expecting this and then she's just as numb as he is in right at the beginning, and it's just as cold. Which I thought was exquisite.
Yeah, because we're so expecting it to be this wonderful Hollywood moment of rejoice and like being safe, but she is just not like distraught is almost too much, like, because I think they've both gone beyond that now. But like, credit to the film for never having to show us that. I mean, there are clip like news footage of Syria.
That scene's so powerful when he's just been told that he can't have asylum and he has to go back to Aleppo because it's safe, and they go back and all the TV screens are just showing how unsafe Aleppo is, and the kind of cruel the cruelty of your news outlets telling everyone how dreadful it is, and then your government telling people it's safe to go back there. Yeah, really beautiful, really powerful, and no one needs to say anything.
What do you think? Is there a kind of an indication as well that the sisters had some abuse on the journey with the lorry driver? Because he says, that was a beautiful load, I don't need any payment. And then she looks at him, and I kind of didn't know whether she had been raped.
Oh, right. I didn't spot that.
There was just this sort of edge of it underneath that because he says, how much is it? And then it sort of comes up, which is really kind of sickening, but also a very powerful way of doing it, because it focuses on her face. There's like a lot of strength in that face and like anger, and kind of like it's a very strong moment. But like we were saying, there's so many moments in that film that you can just miss quite easily.
Yeah.
That's why you need to rewatch it.
Yeah. It's very, very powerful. And then the very, very end, we see Khaled. This fascist group has been sort of chasing him, or keep coming up to him throughout parts in the film. And then seemingly out of the blue to him, he then gets stabbed. I wasn't expecting that. I really liked how they did it as well. Just very simple, like showing the knife, showing it coming out, and then one move, and then that was it.
Yeah, I think it would betray the film to have this moment of violence be gratuitous in any way. What do we get? 3 drops of blood on the floor, and that's it. And following the trail, and then we kind of end up with him, with the dog, as well, lying by the tree looking at the port. And I don't know where that ends. I'd like to think...
Is he going to be all right?
Yeah. I'd like to think he would be. But I think it's quite nice that he's looking at the port in some way. Because it's actually... like, it's quite an ugly thing. It's not like an old English... port, I don't know, Chatham or something, that's got a lot of history to it. It is just these kind of brutal steel structures and cranes, but in those final moments it actually looks quite lovely, and you kind of see the way that he would have perceived it as a place of refuge.
Totally. And it is that thing again about him seeing so much good in things. And also obviously just before he's by the tree, he keeps the promise to meet his sister and doesn't tell her that he's been stabbed, which I thought was really amazing, and kind of just showed that he knows that she's been through as much pain as him, so it's not going to help her.
Yeah, and the fact that... one thing that I would like to mention is that both him and his sister go straight to the police and say that they're seeking asylum. And I think we do have this kind of mistaken identity, and through the media that we watch, we have this idea of asylum seekers just sneaking in and running away across the hills of Dover or something and sneaking into things, and like, this is not that at all. These are like, they've sought emergency transport in any way that they can get it to get out of a war zone. But when they get there, when they do say like we've got here because like this is a last resort for us.
Mm-hmm.
Can you help us?
Mm.
That's what they're asking, rather than like this idea that they're coming to steal.
It's a very good point, yeah.
And I think one of the things that always gets brought up is, oh, well, you should be seeking asylum in the first country that you get to. And obviously Finland isn't the first country he gets to. And when he's talking to the civil servant about it, she asks him, did you seek asylum anywhere else? He says, no. And it's clear from why he says he hasn't sought it. It's because he needed that freedom of movement to try and find a sister, to try and reach proper safety and get somewhere. It wasn't that he was trying to cheat a system or anything like that. You know, there's genuine reasons for... And he wasn't meaning to end up in Finland. That wasn't his end goal, but that was the first place he found that was safe.
Mm.
I think that's really important.
Any final comments?
I think it's also important with the community aspect. Like, one of the first things that someone says to him is, are you sure you want to go to the police? Like, we want to help you almost.
Yeah.
And everyone outside of that system does want to help him. And it's similar in Le Havre as well. People want to help. All the community come together. And Aki Kaurismäki does this great job of bringing the community together in friendship and things like that.
Yeah, you're right. It's wonderful stuff. So that's available on Curzon Home Cinema today. Other films that are also available on Curzon Home Cinema include A Monster Calls, which is another film about hope, but told in a very, very different story, a different way. It's based on the novel by Patrick Ness and tells the story of a young boy who escapes into a fantasy world when his mother becomes sick. But... guess what? The fantasy world and the real world are related in his mind. Metaphors are plenty.
I want to recommend a film that was out in the cinemas at a similar time to A Monster Calls, I think. Jackie, we did a podcast on it with lovely Natalie Portman playing Jackie O. Really brilliant, and it's out on Curzon Home Cinema on Monday. It's just a very interesting sort of character study on her and the few... sort of days, weeks after the assassination of JFK, and I think that's a historical moment we can all sort of pick in our minds, and it's interesting to look at it from another point of view.
Tony Erdmann, also out on Monday. So this is the 2.5 hour long German comedy drama, which was the toast of Cannes last year, which is going on right now, of course. And this is, again, we had a podcast on it in January with Peter Simonishek, who played Tony Erdmann, who came onto the show and spoke to us about it. It's a unique film, to say the least. It's filled with the most remarkable scenes, a party going bizarrely wrong, not involving many items of clothing, is one of the standout scenes of film last year as a whole. So do make sure you check that out. That's on Monday.
I want to recommend Ariel. It's an early Aki Kaurismäki film, and it's about this guy called Taisto who loses his job and kind of goes on a journey to Helsinki with like nothing essentially, and loses everything that he did have. And it's very funny, kind of gets arrested and things like that. And I don't want to spoil anything, but it is very fast-paced and funny, and I think if you like The Other Side of Hope, you'll really like Ariel.
Brilliant. If you are listening to this on Friday, then tomorrow the Bechdel Test Fest presents Ginger and Rosa at Aldgate Curzon Cinema. Also, Zoe Ashton from Fresh Meat will be there presenting a short film that she is in called Little Soldier. That is the Saturday the 27th of May. And oh, maybe there will be a little gift or merchandise thing you might be able to buy that one of us maybe made.
Yes, there might be something made by one of us there.
Really, really, Jake. So be sure to check that out on what promises to be a scorcher of a weekend. Thank you for listening, and thank you to my good friends here in the studio. It's goodbye from me, goodbye from Jenna.
Bye.
Goodbye from Jake.
Bye-bye.
And goodbye from Sam.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.